When it comes to picking stocks, that's something where there's a whole lot of factors going on. And I believe that anybody that's going to be doing that should be putting together a team of advisors, basically. Robert Kiyosaki used to say that investing is a team sport. And a team is basically somebody subscribing to your services. You're their team member. When somebody goes into stocks, especially when it comes to the junior miners, it's pretty easy to get slaughtered. There's a lot of leverage there, but there's actually, on the average, there's a little bit more leverage to the downside than there is the upside. Okay. And so if you don't have some good guidance where somebody is studying the mining company's assets, their assets in the ground, and the management team, and then picking the right time to buy based on just what's happening with that particular stock versus analyzing the entire, you know, the economy and the precious metals sector, which is what you do for physical gold and silver accumulation. I just buy every month, basically, and I pretty much have since the beginning of the bull market back in 2001. And I like that approach because it's dollar cost averaging. When the price drops, if you're spending about the same amount of currency on your metals, you're getting a whole lot more ounces for your currency. And so when it comes to the accumulation of physical, I like dollar cost averaging, and I do like watching the commitment of traders because they are right a tremendous percentage of the time. There are times when they're not right, but what they do is they've got extremely deep pockets and they just keep on doubling down on their position until they are right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So let's talk about, when you have stocks versus physical, people can get stopped out. And if you don't know what you're doing and you just set stops based on your own instincts, you're going to be buying into what I call a herding mentality. And people tend to place stop or loss orders where you're programming into your trading platform a trade. Should the stock fall to a certain level, it's going to automatically sell that stock for you so that you don't have further losses. And what that does is it locks in your losses. They now have become real. With physical, as you're accumulating it, you don't get stopped out if you're taking delivery or you're putting it in a storage account at one of the big depositories where it's insured. But if you've got guidance, I mean, you do recommend stop loss positions sometimes, but it's a much more educated guess than somebody just taking a gut feeling and saying, I'm going to put a stop loss at $20 or whatever.
Right. Well, you know, I started, Mike, I was really cognizant of how difficult it is to do well in the junior mining space on a consistent basis. So I started with the top tier, mid tier, and a speculative section. And the speculative section is money you can afford to lose. And that's what speculation is all about. And if the company does well, you can add as the company develops and goes higher. As far as like, you know, if you just go to the top tier list, I'm looking over here on the other screen. That's when my eyes are shifting. But, you know, one of our top tier stocks from 2002 is still up 614%. So yeah. That means that even during this terrible bear market that we had for about 5 years, if you put big money in big companies like I recommend for the top tier, you know, that company's up 600%. Another one that's a well-known silver company is up 400%. One of my favorite silver companies up 853%. And, you know, those are like three that if you put large money in, you're still, you know, you're pretty happy, actually. In the mid-tier, I don't have any that I can brag about at that level. One's up 152%. And that's from March 2015. But on the speculative side, that thing varies a lot and it's all over the place. And we're constantly changing that because to speculate properly, it's, as you said earlier in our discussion, it's a math problem. if you've got 10 stocks and you can afford to lose $500 on 10 stocks, I'm not saying everybody can. I'm just using that as an example. You say $50. And you put it in, and we never try to have more than 10 right now. I think there's 8. But 2 or 3 of them are probably going to lose you money or go to zero. That happens in some of these situations. We are a little more careful than that. But regardless, as careful as you can be, stuff happens on these juniors. But some will go up 10, 20, 30, 40 fold. I mean, we've got one right now that came out with a press release that's going to be a spinoff. So people will be getting this new company for free. And it's been one that has not really performed that well up until now. But I'm really excited about the prospects for this thing going forward. But again, a speculation is a speculation. So I wanted to do it differently, Mike, when I started the Morgan Report. It was called Silver Investor at the time. Just like you, you know, wanted to be different in the precious metals arena. You know, we had quite a bit of discussion about that. That recently, but you know, you envision things differently, and I hopefully do as well. One, we have really sincere motives. We really want to help ourselves, but help others at the same time. And when you spend a great deal of money to do the hidden secrets of money, and that doesn't come from nowhere. It's like you got a bunch of donations to put it together. You took profits out of the company to educate the public on how vital it is to have precious metals. And in my case, you know, I do a lot on the internet for free for the same reason. But we both have businesses to run, you know, and I don't mind saying it. I mean, this Morgan Report is certainly not for everybody, but for people that want to get that edge, I'll put up our track record against anybody out there in the stock picking regime in the natural resource sector. And we don't just do silver and gold. We've done copper, moly, energy companies, lithium, cobalt, which is coming to the fore again. I knew Marianne Green way back when, but you want to make this about me. But certainly we cover the resource sector. I want to make that clear.
Okay. Yeah, you know, a lot of times I'm accused of just trying to pump gold and silver because I'm a dealer. And that just stabs at my heart like you wouldn't believe. I was a metals investor first. I started buying first. And then I started educating. And then to fund the education, I opened a precious metals dealership because it's the one thing that I thought the business that I saw where I could actually be helping people and protecting them, because I honestly believe that the way that the world is running, the world monetary system is running, that we're headed for an eventual disaster. And the more that they paper over things, the worse it's going to be. It just stores energy. Every time they do another manipulation, every time they don't allow the free market to work. So I'm sure, I know that you agree on that. So,
wholeheartedly. Well, I've got to make a little joke here. I think Dan might have heard it. And this is just a little humor to lighten things up. But, you know, you and I have known each other for a long time. I think I met you in Vancouver the first time. And I know you came to, I think it was the second Silver Summit. And we had a chat there. And then I think the second or third, you could correct me, you started speaking at our workshop. So, you know, we were just at the San Francisco Silver and Gold Summit, as you mentioned when we started this discussion. And I made a joke in the workshop, because what I said was this. I said, you know, I was one of the founders and, in fact, one of the idea guys to start the Silver Summit so many years ago. And the early days, I used to put Mike Maloney in the workshop because he wasn't all that polished a speaker, and I would have the main stage. And I go, well, here it is several years later. Mike's on the main stage, and I'm in the workshop. And I have no problem with that whatsoever. But I thought you might get a little chuckle out of that, because you've come a long ways, and you've always had a great heart, and you've always wanted to help people. And I thought it's funny how things develop over time.
Yeah, it is. You know, I remember when we were up at Gold Rush 21 in Dawson, Canada. So we're up inside the Arctic Circle where the Klondike Gold Rush had happened, in this tiny little town. And it was light until 1 or 2 a.m. every night. But on one of the days, I asked you if we could have breakfast together. And you said yes, and we had breakfast together. And I told you that I was going to be getting into this industry and I'd like your help, and you offered it. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, one part of the story, Mike, that I learned years later at dinner with you one time was that you were actually writing a letter to Robert Kiyosaki on the flight back from Dawson. And, you know, you were very smart and to do that because, you know, a lot of real estate investors are focused on real estate, just like a lot of metals investors are focused only on metals. And you broke into a field where they were peaking and the metals are very low. And you've, you know, helped a lot of people get out of real estate at the top and then the metals at the bottom. So I commend you for that.
Yeah, I was, I purposely tried to make an alliance with somebody that was in the sector that was in a bubble at the time. And, you know, it was a goal to try and save people with precious metals. You know, we were talking before the interview started here, and I was talking about capitalism versus collectivism. And Dan, the producer of Hidden Secrets of Money and this piece here that we're doing, sent me some pictures. There's one, the caption is, it's an artist standing in front of a blank canvas, and the caption is, "I just painted you a picture of all the times communism helped the poor," and it's blank. And then the other one was socialism. Guaranteeing everyone equal parts of nothing. And, you know, it's interesting that we go through these swings from capitalism to collectivism, and it's a cycle, and it is so hard to battle against and show people where all prosperity comes from. All prosperity comes from people wanting to deal with one another, the free market. You take somebody to dinner, that person the restaurant owner, he then goes and pays for dry cleaning the next day, and so on and so forth. And prosperity compounds from all of us making transactions with one another. And when the government tries to manage and dictate all of those transactions, it just crushes prosperity. This is one of the things that I've been speaking about. I know you have too. You know, I was very inspired when I saw you on stage, I think back in 2002 or 3 in Vancouver, and then at the Silver Summit. That's what made me want to get into this. But, you know, you ended your speech talking about freedom and so on. And the IRS, the IRS code was 2.4 million words, and people couldn't understand it. So they just redefined it and added a bunch more codes and regulations with another 7.7 million words to try and simplify the understanding of the 2.4 million words. So now that there's over 10 million words of IRS tax code, it's not possible for anybody on the planet, nobody could possibly have a chance of understanding this. And it puts government in a position now where, you know, if they look hard enough for the right code or the right angle on this or that with all those words, they can make anybody a criminal. Today, every single person in the United States is a criminal because of the way they've been able to write law. It's a scary thing, and you and I have both been railing against this for a decade and more now. And so I want to thank you for all of that. Have you got anything to say about that?
No, it's just, you go back to, you know, Bastiat's The Law, and it's, as you say, cycle repeating itself. And I do like what Steve Forbes says. He says, you know, the code is, they don't know what's in it. We don't know what's in it. We should scrap it and start over. I mean, if you look at something like a VAT, where if you buy a luxury good, you know, you have a value added tax on it. That's at least a voluntary system where if you don't, you know, if you want to buy the Tesla, I'll pick on you for a minute, Mike, you pay a little more than if someone buys a Volkswagen such as myself, but it's a free choice. Mike Maloney says, yep, I want the Tesla, and I understand I pay a little bit higher percentage because, you know, the government is edict, so they're still controlling things, but it's a lot more free. At least you have the choice to buy a car or not, or to buy a different car. But the way it's set up now, as you said, no one understands it. No one could get their arms around it. Every year, I think three different leading tax preparing authorities, meaning, you know, these shops like H&R Block, and there's several of them. And they give the exact same data to all three, and the returns are prepared, and they always come out with different numbers. So what does that tell you?
It tells me that there's no possibility of understanding the tax code, and that's the reason the numbers always come out different. We're now near the end. In this, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but in the article that Dan sent me about the taxes, the tax code going from 2.4 million words to over 10 million words, one of the things that it says is that pushes the cost of compliance now. When you talk about all of the people that have to be paid to help you to file a proper tax return, the cost to society is now over $1 trillion. And so, you know, if we eliminated taxes in the tax code, society actually might be better off. So it's just interesting, these cycles, and it's part of that capitalism to collectivism cycle. Everybody, the politicians want to try and make everybody equal. They all want to share the wealth as if the wealth was a static quantity that already existed at some point. All of these people in government and the IRS don't seem to understand that all of us as individuals create wealth. And when we have a whole bunch of people standing between a transaction, when the government is going to regulate it and tax it to death and everything else, it just sucks up what I call economic energy and neutralizes it, and society suffers as a whole because of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
We're in the end of a very last stages now of a 35-year-old bond bull market. The stock market crashed in the year 2000, 2001. It crashed again in 08, 09. And real estate crashed in 07, 08. And so we've had two stock market crashes already this century, one enormous real estate crash that almost brought down the entire world economy. The first two times, the first stock market crash, the baby boomers, which is about a quarter of the, it's 75 million people. That, you know, there's 300 million people in the United States. So it's about a quarter of the population. They had 20 years to recover. Then the real estate and the end of the real estate bubble and another stock market crash. And so they saw their IRAs collapse to a very low level from 2000 to 2002. And then they saw the same thing happen with both stocks and real estate from 2007 to 2009. And this, we are 7 years, more than 7 years into this expansion, economic expansion, since the recession of 2008, 2009. And it's just about to become the third longest, or it is right now, the third longest economic expansion in U.S. history. And then if it goes for another 6 or 8 months, it'll be the second longest. And the longer it goes, the less chance of it continuing. The chances of a crash are becoming greater and greater and greater. It's right around the corner. But this time, we've got stocks that have been pushed back up into a bubble with PE ratios on the S&P 500 up in the 27 range, which is higher than 1929. We're in that territory. The real estate in most major cities has been pushed back into a bubble, nowhere near where it was in 2007, but still an enormous bubble. And bonds have been in a bull market for 35 years. If you look at the 30-year treasury, it's a perfect, I mean, you can draw a ruler flat line on the top and bottom of either the price or the yield. Bull markets, there's no such thing as a bull market that lasts forever. It doesn't happen. And so it has to come to an end. And my feeling is that this is going to be, for most people, a pretty tragic end. And I believe that it's right around the corner because of how long this economic expansion has already gone on. And all of the things that they did after the last crisis, the laws that did get passed, nothing fixed what was going on. Everything made it worse. What's your opinion on all of that?
Well, I just add a little bit to it. I think, first of all, the synergistic effect, because there's really a direct correlation between stocks and bonds right now. And I'd even argue there's a correlation in real estate. And the reason I say that is because everything that is debt-based or based on borrowing money, which is real estate, the bond market, and the equity market to a great degree, because there's a lot of margin and leverage used in the stock market, especially by the professionals, pension funds, and the banks, and that's why they can make a 2% yield.
And that's 20%. The bulk of the trading these days, too.
That's right.
Those entities you just mentioned, not individual investors.
So you could have a real estate domino fall that hits both the bond market and the stock market, or stock market domino fall that spills over into, what I'm saying is they're really one group. It's leveraged debt-based investment, and it's largely malinvestment. It's not producing new wealth where we could pay down the debt. So that's what worries me. So going back to the very beginning of our conversation, Mike, I said that I agreed that this will probably be the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind, which means people that don't use leverage, that actually own what they own, like you always say, if you can't hold it, you don't own it. In those type of situations, it doesn't have to just be precious metals. You can have, you know, yielding real estate that you own outright or have very low debt on, that type of thing. And there are other assets. But the idea is living within your means and having a very, very conservative approach, because this could go into a debt situation where it hurts so bad that it could wipe you out or nearly do so. And then the rebounding printing of money that will most likely take place afterwards, you might not be there. And I still am advocating not to bet on inflation bailing you out. I still think it's the best and most prudent strategy to just, again, live within your means, pay for your investments in full, and get ready for this reset, because it is going to be, again, something I think, one, it's global, two, it's inevitable, and three, that none of us know exactly how it'll play out, and therefore you need to be as flexible as you possibly can.
Yeah. I think that this one, the crisis of 2008 was basically a movie trailer, and now we're getting ready for the main feature. That was just a tiny little blip, as I've said before, and Dan was really the one that originally said this. It was just a speed bump on the way to the main event. We're in for something really big. The wealth transfer will be the greatest in history. People do need to protect themselves. I can't believe, every time I pull out a piece of paper currency and look at it, I just can't believe that we are dumb enough to participate in this system. But you have to. Yeah. I mean, it's totally absurd. So anyway.
I'll leave it with that. I've got a fair amount of the Zims here. And I know you've used it in your discussions, and I know I've said this on a show or two in the past, but there we have the $100 trillion. Geez, Mike, we're only at $20 trillion debt. We could use this one piece of paper right here and have $80 trillion left over and pay off the national debt. So here's my point. I want to leave a little humor. I gave this to my mother-in-law many years ago, and she held it. She looked at it. She says, "Oh, if only it were real." And I said, "It is real." And she couldn't get the concept that just because you have a lot of zeros doesn't make it valuable. She just thought it was play money, and it turned out to be play money, like all our currency. Let me get on the Mike Malone. And I agree with you. I'm bad at always using currency, but this currency at one time was real. It's not anymore, but this is what happens. You cannot spend yourself or borrow yourself rich, and you can't print yourself wealthy. And these are lessons that, unfortunately, looks like we're going to have to learn again the hard way.
Yes. That's a great way to close this conversation. I thank you so much. It's been great. I look forward to the next time we get together.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
Okay. See ya.
See you.